Hello and good morning. You're listening to WCOM LP Chapel Hill and Carrboro. And this is where we support freedom of expression as being essential to a free society. Welcome to Claudia's Speakeasy and Radio Theater, bringing Carolina coast to coast and the speakeasy to your doorstep. Your host, Claudio, Renaissance man and bard of WCOM, has opened the doors of the speakeasy to invite you all to come as you are.
Good morning, indeed.
Find a seat.
I can't hear me. I'm not on.
Well, this is very funny because...
One, two.
All right, speak up.
Try another mic. I might be on another mic. I'm not getting
me at all. There we go. That's the mic.
Well, I was just taking Claudio and putting him out in the backyard.
Yes, that's it.
When we have these multiple mics here.
Yes.
So we'll just start that all over again.
Good morning, everyone. Thanks
Good
for joining
morning.
Us on the Speakeasy.
And welcome to Claudio's Speakeasy and Radio Theater, bringing Carolina coast to coast and the Speakeasy to your doorstep. Your host, Claudio, Renaissance man and bard of WCOM, has opened the doors of the Speakeasy to invite you all to come as you are, find a seat, and get comfortable in the place where you're always welcome and can always expect the best, at least when we're functioning well.
We'd like to think so, right. I think they heard your part. I think it was me they
Well,
they,
it was because I had you up on mic two and you're actually on mic three.
It. All right, we're going to fly this biplane right now.
We keep trying.
Absolutely. We've got an interesting little program coming on. I'm going to get a call in from California, which I think is a 3 or 4 hour difference. From Gerald LeBaron, a personal friend who is trying to keep the politicians or Congress in gear. He just sent me a documentary, which was nearly 2 years in the making. Filmmaker Jed Rigney follows Gerald LeBaron as he examines the root problems in U.S. politics that have played major roles in the economic meltdown, declining education, crony capitalism, and a resulting Occupy Wall Street movement. In this modern-day David versus Goliath, Gerald LeBaron sets out on a journey to make our politicians do the jobs they were hired to do. Isn't that fancy? Can one man really make a difference? Probably not. Well, I think that's a rather defeatist statement there. Probably, I'd like to think one man can. One voice. But Gerald's inexperience may actually be his best weapon. The distribution of this film has not yet been determined, but I do think it's out at this point. Gerald will... fill us in on this, and essentially he's going after Congress and our politicians to read up on what they legislate and what they turn into law. Many of them don't actually know what it is they're signing or agreeing to because they haven't taken the time or had their staff take the time to fully explain all the nuts and bolts, and that's one of the reasons we're getting rolled over.
And Gerald is Gerrol, am I correct?
Gerald LeBaron.
Yes.
That's L-E and then big B-A-R-O-N.
Right. Okay. And well, it should be interesting.
He's had a presence for quite some time. You know, I've got a bit of a concern with this this recent shipwreck in Italy.
Mm-hmm.
When did it happen that captains, and this isn't the first time a captain has left the ship, while the darn thing was sinking instead of staying on board to make sure people are brought and bled to safety? This is a stunning development. Mm. The captain was essentially instructing from off ship. While the ship was going down, have you kept up with the news on that?
No, I'm afraid I'm very, very deeply involved in some other stuff that's going on right now. Locally,
it's an amazing.
So I haven't paid attention.
Amazing concept on leadership. The captain runs the thing aground. The thing tips over, and by the time it's halfway sunk, he's gone. Which.
Well, he wasn't going down with the ship, right?
Certainly makes a statement for our times, doesn't it?
I don't know.
So what's going on in your home front? Still building the home? Have you invested
any
time in that?
Well, as I mentioned earlier, I went out this weekend and bought my mailbox.
Aha! Step by step, we're getting there.
You know, you realize, make things materialize by one little step at a time. I will be tomorrow going down to put in my application for a building permit.
Good.
And I will be contacting today my favorite do-it-all person about getting that mailbox put up.
So you've paid all those necessary bills in advance?
Well, you know, I actually, before they hand me the permit, I'll have some costs to come up with. But actually putting the paperwork in, I shouldn't have to write a check right then. But Yeah, I'm moving forward as fast as I can, as far as I can, and opening the doors to the universe to rain down bounty on me so I can make sure I can actually put a roof over this thing.
Marvelous. Great idea. Yes. Build the walls and put the roof on.
Well, you know, if you don't take that first step, it never happens.
I think we've got somebody calling in already. Let's make sure that's not Gerald.
Good morning. This is WCOM.
Bueno.
Hello.
I'm out of 6 minutes.
Oh, I'm sorry.
We're on the air, buddy. Sorry. I don't know who that was. I think he might have been trying to reach somebody else.
Yes, right.
Let me go into acknowledging the historic Carolina Theater as being the underwriter of Claudio Speakeasy and Radio Theater. They've got all kinds of things going up. Just check out their website. That's carolinatheater.org. They've been the underwriter and sponsor of this show for quite some time now.
Forever, almost.
Yes,
right.
Since
right.
my beginnings here. Happy to say.
Yes.
And they have really, the theater has been beautifully restored, has an entirely new opulence that doesn't take away from the old.
Mm-hmm.
So check out the website.
And okay.
And keep up with them. I want to also say, I want to dedicate today's show to two special friends. One, my dog of at least 10 or 11 years, named Girl, passed away. And sadly, one of my best friends of the last decade or more, ever since my being lead fire watch at the nuclear plant, I just wanted to educate myself in that realm, and he's a friendship I made there, true friendship. He went to the VA hospital to have a pancreas operation, came out of the operation looking very jaundiced. They had to put him back under the knife, and after that, he showed some promise, was actually exercising, and one day while his family was visiting, literally had a heart attack, his heart stopped. They revived him. But he's been on a machine ever since, and I suppose they would term that clinically dead. They did an MRI. They found very little brain activity presently, and I'm not sure if he's going to pull through, so this is also dedicated to my buddy Ralph O'Quinn, presently still at the VA hospital in Durham. So,
and we can all, you know, send positive goodbye, energy, send please. Prayers, and hope that all goes well.
A dear friend, indeed. Mm-hmm. But beyond that, looking forward to chatting with Gerald LeBaron. And in case Gerald doesn't call in, sometimes these things with California can get a little confused. We're gonna throw some music together. But in the meantime, we'll just sort of ramble on about world issues. So anything in the news struck you lately, or anything in particular?
My whole attitude towards world news is to avoid it.
Yes, much healthier.
Well, I have lived on the planet long enough to have a fairly decent grasp of what. How the world operates. I also have a past history of graduate work in political science and international economy.
Oh, so you know what this depression is all about. Okay.
I know what the depressing is all
yes,
about.
Yes, that's actually what I meant.
As a race, we do try, but I have, this might sound very strange, or probably does, but I sometimes think that we are just not strong enough for this world. It's just can be a very sad picture and a very frustrating picture. But
yeah.
You know, we as human beings are also can be very beautiful and very wonderful.
I'm talking more about the political situation
right now.
This is a horse we have to grab by the reins, otherwise it's going to run away with whatever it
right.
wants to do. And for some reason, this country, politically speaking, seems to be more preoccupied with saving those that already have it all than really going out of their way for the starving masses. Essentially.
Well, you see, the understanding is that the ones, supposedly, the theory being that the ones who have it all provide the means by which the others will have something.
The trickle-down
theory.
This
is the old trickle-down theory, which I, in the past, have actually done some research on, which I did not keep because it was like over 20 years ago, where it has been, by research and study, explained very clearly that it does not work. And
no,
this
it doesn't.
Has been done by research, not just political hype or ranting
yeah.
and raving. There is research that it just does not work. So
that bill of goods,
we
can
also deal
null
with,
and void.
You know, the people's mindsets. I mean, the average IQ is 100.
Yeah, so we can make that concept null and void. And this may be Gerald from California. Let's
okay.
find out.
Okay. Good morning. This is WCOM. Whoops.
We thought
good
it was.
Good morning. This is WCOM.
Good morning. This is Gerald LeBaron.
Hello, Gerald.
Hi. Is this Claudio?
This is Claudio, yes.
How are you doing, sir?
Doing very well. But how about you? I like your... I watched your documentary recently and enjoyed that rather epic adventure you went through. What was it? 9,000 miles you logged, or how many?
In 6 months, I think the documentary shows about 20,000. But
20,000. Good Lord.
But it was actually closer to 40,000.
Yow!
6 months, yeah.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, this is Gerald LeBaron calling us from where exactly in California?
Tahunga, California, which is a part of L.A. County.
All right, L.A. County. So what is the time difference? We have about 4 hour time difference there?
3 hours, I believe. It's 7:10 over here, so I believe it's what, 10:10 over there?
Yes. Well, I'm glad I didn't get you up too early.
And I've been up since 4 my time.
Oh, goodness, okay.
So, yeah.
An early riser. Well, welcome to the speakeasy.
Well, thank you so much. I'm glad to be on your show again.
I'm anxious to catch up on all the things you can tell us about our political system. or the lack thereof.
Or the lack thereof. That is absolutely right. Well, it's actually, if we're talking about our political system, I'm not too pleased. If we're talking about Fools on the Hill, the documentary, then we're definitely making progress there. Obviously, there have been a few laws that have been passed lately that have not been anything that I appreciate.
Hmm.
What would you like to talk about, my man?
The very thing you just touched on.
Well, I tell you, the first thing that really disturbs me is the Defense Authorization Act that was passed. I am extremely displeased with it because, in essence, what it does is it allows government to really, basically what you can do is you can say, Joe Blow is a suspect terrorist, and so therefore we can now arrest him in the military prison and not give him due process. He can never have a trial.
Yeah, I did notice that. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's actually a lot worse than a lot of people have said. The bottom line is yes, it does violate several amendments to our Constitution. But the problem that I see is that so few people mention how this affects our First Amendment. And it reminds me of when Bush was in office.
Oh, it's definitely in the Bush League, yeah.
Yeah, and I don't know if you ever saw this play out on TV, but I remember watching TV, and this guy was in the gym, and he was exercising, and he was not approving of Afghanistan or Iraq or anything like that. And my point isn't whether one approves of what we're doing in Iraq or Afghanistan. That's not my point at all. But basically, he didn't approve of it, and he referred to President Bush as a terrorist. And the next thing he knows, a couple of days later, he's got the FBI at his door.
And you're
kidding.
And
they're interviewing him. And this is not what America's about. We should have freedom of speech.
Absolutely.
So when you get into a situation where the way the Defense Authorization Act was written is it mentions a belligerent act, but it doesn't actually define it. So let's say that you've got a situation where you're in a home and you see this woman, and she may very well be a terrorist. You know, she may very well be, but she's running down the street and she bangs on a door and she goes, "I've got these guys after me, help me, help me." And who would turn down something like that? So you let that person in, you try and protect them, and all of a sudden you're harboring a terrorist. So now all of your rights are gone, and you can be put in a prison, in a military prison for that, and never get a trial. That would be just one example. Now it is a little bit far-fetched. There's no disagreement with that. But still.
I was informed of the very thing you're talking about by the Bill of Rights Commission that, you know, that sends emails out. The very topic you're discussing.
Yeah, yeah. You know, something that might be a little bit more realistic, because the way it's written is that you can be let's say a person is a suspected terrorist. First of all, there's no proof. It's just suspicion.
Right.
All right? So you got a person who's suspected of being a terrorist. Now, terrorists, by their nature and by what they're doing, they have to be secretive. So you could have rent out a room to someone who's a terrorist, and by all indications, this person's a quiet, easygoing person. You don't even know them. They're hardly ever there. But you're harboring this person. And so because you are harboring this person, you can go to jail for the rest of your life without a trial. It's just appalling that they can do something.
And has this gone through? Has this been made law?
It's been passed.
It was
a bipartisan pass, too. For example, the Senate, out of the 99 that voted, 86 of them voted to pass this act.
Good Lord.
And so, yes, we've got the various other amendments, the 4th, the 6th, the 7th, the 8th, and so on. But when you include that little clause that says belligerent act, and you don't define what a belligerent act is...
It can essentially become whatever they want it to be.
It can become whatever they want it to be. And what this does is it puts us in a situation where, let's say that Martin Luther King were alive today, and he was, really pushing civil rights like he did in a peaceful, I admire Martin Luther King Jr. just tremendously for what he was able to do.
Right.
But someone like that, he could be declared a terrorist or be suspected to be a terrorist. Or because of all the different people that he talks to and is in association with, somewhere along the line, they're going to be able to make some kind of a link and go, oh, he's talking to this person who's a suspected terrorist, so now Martin Luther King has no more rights, and we're going to put him in jail for the rest of his life, and there goes the First Amendment.
As soon as they can find an appropriative measure.
That's right.
Yeah.
And even if there wasn't some, friend of a friend of a friend, there's no reason why they couldn't even still say that he was connected. They wouldn't have to prove it.
Well, if you recall, back in during the first Bush administration, on the war against drugs, they did the same thing with being able to confiscate vessels, vehicles, and so on, without any proof or without any reason, just based on suspicion. And in most cases, those things were sold at police auction, never got returned, despite the fact that some of those suspicions were never proven.
Yeah, yeah, and that's where I have a problem with these politicians. The thing is when you go to pass a law, the first question you have to ask yourself, and I've seen this in a couple at the state level, I've seen this a little bit more a few times, not all the time, but the first thing you have to ask yourself is, what problem are they trying to solve? Is there actually a problem here? I mean, that's the first thing you have to ask. And I just don't think that these guys are doing the due diligence that they should, the real homework that they should be doing before they pass a law like this.
My impression, and this is very very much directly a part of what you're saying, my impression has been that it's sort of been just a blind grab for power for the longest time.
Yeah, yeah. And that's the way I view it, too. I mean, why, if someone is suspected of doing something wrong, I'm suspected of having stolen a car. Well, they don't just arrest you and put you in jail for the rest of your life. They have to prove it.
Mm-hmm. They should have to prove it, yes.
They should have to prove it. And I'm all for, weeding out terrorists and keeping our nation secure and so on. But you've got to do it by the book. Otherwise, we just become a police state. And when you can go out and you can just label somebody a suspected terrorist without any doggone proof at all, there goes our freedom of speech.
Has shades of old Germany, yep.
That's exactly right. That is exactly right. And so that's what I'm pushing here with my documentary, Fools on the Hill, is, the first thing you have to do is you've got to look at the problem.
Before we go into that, introduce us to your entire agenda first and what you've already established in that regard, and then we'll go to the documentary.
Okay.
As far as your company,
my organization is Honor in Office.
Yes.
Anyone go to honorinoffice.org. And basically what I've been pushing for the last several years since I found out how the Patriot Act was passed.
Yes.
I've been basically saying, if you're going to pass a law, then you should have done your homework. You should have done the due diligence.
And you're saying this to Congress.
I'm saying this to Congress, and I'm saying this to the state legislatures, and mm-hmm. I'm also saying this at the city level. You've got to have done the due diligence. You have to have really looked at it and weighed the pros and cons and looked for other cities, states, nations that have used this same law, because there's plenty of examples everywhere, and shown that it has a proven track record of uniform success without having made things worse. You know, you do the due diligence, and once you've decided on something and you think it's a good idea, you should be proud enough of your work that the citizens whom the law is going to affect, they should have the right to see the final version of that directive, policy, law, or whatever it may be, well in advance of the vote.
Transparency.
So provide our thought, our thoughtful input. Transparency before the fact. Who cares? I mean, yes, transparency after the fact is important, but when you're passing laws, transparency before the fact is what helps keep them honest. There's no way, the way Congress acts right now is they can add 300 pages to a bill in the middle of the night and pass it the next day.
And that's commonly how they're doing it as well.
It is how they do it. And this is appalling. I mean, if you go to the government website and you take a look at some of the bills that they've passed, you'll find that they've amended the bill, they've passed it by the House, they've passed it by the Senate, and even the President has signed it into law, all in the same day. How can you have good policy like that?
I agree. Do you have a particular example of that? I mean, I know exactly what you're saying. Just wondering if you have an example that might...
You know, I did it one time. I mean, you can even take a look at the Defense Authorization Act. That thing was being amended on a daily basis until it was passed.
Mm-hmm. And they keep talking about how no addendums and no additions will be made in the interest of transparency, and yet you find during the dark hours of the night or the wee hours of the morning, it's done.
That's right. That's right. You know, it's commonplace. So that would be, I don't know if it was all in this, I don't know if they amended it on, you know, say the 10th or whenever it was. I don't know if they amended it and passed it by both houses and signed into law the next day. I don't think it was. But it's still a good example of how quickly they rush a bill through. And when you're talking about civil rights, you don't rush something like that through.
No.
You get that thing as good as you can make it, and then you let the citizens read it and study it, and you leave it there for a month or 2 months, and you say, here it is. Is there anything we've missed?
And in so many cases, things are sold out to the corporate because we have given them individual status, which is something I've always had a problem with, and I think that should be stripped from corporations. I think we should go back to the individuals, potentially the individuals working in these corporations, but not the corporation itself holding a democratic status.
Excuse me. There's quite a few reasons for corporations to be considered entities on their own.
Mm-hmm.
But when it comes to the Bill of Rights, when it comes to them being counted as a citizen,
yes, that should.
I have an issue with that.
Absolutely. That's ultimately where a lot of these addendums that are being made to these bills that you talk about, these things getting passed, that's where a lot of these advantages are floated to.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. And that's why you want transparency before the fact. You want to see that bill 30 days in advance of the vote so that you can see whose fingers are in the pie.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why we need to see the final versions well in advance of the vote so that we can see what special interests are benefiting from this. Because when it's the special interests, whether they be corporations, unions, or whatever, or even individuals, they can slip little things in there. Just a slight change of a wording ends up putting it in their benefit.
Mm-hmm. Of course, there's the whole thing about legalese, too. In some cases, we don't even know what the language means or pertains to until it winds up in front of a judge and ends up being in the favor of a system that we oppose.
That's right. That's absolutely right. So that's what I'm working on, is just getting these guys to, you know, do a due diligence. I mean, how can you be sure the bill you haven't read is going to solve the problem you haven't looked at?
Yes.
I don't know how you can figure that out.
No, you can't. It's absolutely impossible, especially with all of the misgivings that accompany everything today. I mean, the deceptions that seem to go with everything politically.
Yeah, I'll even take it one step further, if with your permission, is that, you know, I've looked at, you know, and granted, I'm not an economist, but from what I've studied and what I've looked at, the reason we have this great recession is due to Congress.
I can,
you know, they caused it.
I can see that very clearly. Yes.
Yeah, I mean, when you take a look at the various laws that they passed, I mean, there's an act. It's called the Glass-Steagall Act, and it has to do with making sure that banks aren't able to underwrite their own. You know, so it has to do with manipulating money is the bottom line.
Absolutely, and that economic, there are a lot of questions, even about 9/11, as far as economic manipulations go. And yeah. I spoke to a dear friend, friends and family in Germany, and we were talking about, you know, the evolvement of the Third Reich and how that all came about. Well, the government essentially didn't have any power until the economy was completely destroyed, and then they were able to manipulate the German people into whatever they wanted. And ultimately, yeah, shades of that seem to be appearing here.
Yeah. Yeah, I would tend to agree with you on that. But just back to the Glass-Steagall Act just for 1 second. Mm-hmm. This is a bill that was passed right after the Great Depression. What year was it? I think it was like 1932 or something. Right during that time, this bill was passed. And it was specifically designed to prevent a great another depression. That was its purpose, because the stock market and the banks, they were playing games. They were, you know, basically pushing paper.
Little gambling casino, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And so it was passed to prevent that from ever occurring again. So what does our Congress do? They repeal that particular law. Yeah, you run into a wall when you're 5 years old, and you hit smack into this brick wall. You're not going to go 65 years later and say, well, that was then, this is now, I can run into that brick wall.
Yeah, right.
It's just stupid. They're supposed to be doing a due diligence. So that was just one of several laws that they passed that put us in the financial situation that we're in now. It's completely Congress's fault.
I can't deny that personally, not from my impression.
Yeah, yeah. So basically, what I've been working on is you know, getting them a little more accountable. The fascinating thing, Claudio, is that it doesn't matter what job you have. You could be a restaurant clerk. You could be a president of a corporation. You could be a wife or a husband, or you could a gardener. It doesn't matter what your job is. You always have a job description. Even a hitman or a prostitute. You know, if the hitman doesn't carry out the hit, they're going to put out a hit on him.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
You know, they each have a job. If your job is to be a hitman, your job is to go out there and take out the person you're supposed to take out. And if you don't take him out, you're gone.
Yeah.
Well, our politicians don't have any job description. Let me rephrase that. Our legislators, our policymakers, don't have a job description. And the most fundamental job description they should have is that they should understand what they're passing into law.
No doubt about that. Now, I didn't realize that they don't have a quote-unquote job description. I would have thought that would be as part of what they were hired in for. So you're saying there is absolutely not a job description?
There is no job description for a legislator.
Just legislator. That's it.
That's right. Their job is to pass laws. that's the scope of their actual job description in terms of how they perform their tasks. They've got there's no law that says how do you perform your task. How are you required to pass a law? What do you have to do in order to be able to vote to pass a law and affect hundreds of millions of lives? There is no description on it.
My goodness. That sort of makes you scratch your head.
Is give them a job description.
Yeah. Is there any movement in that regard? I know people like yourself, with your epic journey here recently, which I'd like to talk more about, but just wondering if in any of that you sense that that there were enough people fighting for some of this to begin to happen.
Well, I'm not the only person. In fact, there's Sunlight Foundation, and now their focus is a little bit more on transparency after the fact, but they certainly support transparency before the fact as well. And they tend to be, they say they're nonpartisan. I've been told that they might be just a tad on the liberal side, but it's they're nonpartisan enough for me. I've looked them up, and I feel that they're really just trying to get transparency no matter.
How do you see the Occupy movement playing a part?
You know, in looking at both the Occupy movement as well as the Tea Party, I really take offense when somebody refers to the Tea Party as right-wing nuts or teabaggers or whatever. And I really take offense when people refer to the Occupy movement as just a bunch of liberals trying to get something for nothing, entitlement, etc.
Well, it's always played down, yeah.
Yeah, I take offense to that because if you're looking at both those organizations or both those movements, the fundamental thing they have in common is that they are not happy with the way our government is performing its tasks.
Absolutely, and it seems to be the only voice that's emerging with any kind of consistency.
That's right. That's right. I mean, they both say, "Hey, politicians, do your doggone job."
Right.
And they've got a little bit of a different slant, but that's the bottom line for both of them. And I agree, our politicians should be doing their job, and it should start with a due diligence. So, and I think it's vital that these Occupy movements and Tea Party movements continue doing what they're doing.
Oh, so do I.
We cannot rely on the Democratic and Republican parties.
No, it's pretty much they strike me as being the branch of branch of the same tree.
You know, I was just telling my wife the same thing the other day. You know, you take a look at their platforms, and they both have good things, honorable things that they're supporting on their platforms. But when you look at their voting record, and you look at the laws that they're passing, and you look at the fact that over the last couple of decades, both the Democrats and the Republican parties have had control of the White House and Congress, and you see that when that happens, we go down even further.
Mm-hmm.
They're not working for us. I mean, they get billions of dollars. It's a billion-dollar industry. They get that money from special interests. So
absolutely.
That's who they're supporting, not us.
And, you know, just sort of jumping sideways a little bit, they're talking about all these billions of dollars they're cutting in school programming and otherwise. Nobody has yet sent made an investigation of all the money that was lost in this war, the supposed war that we've got going on in the Middle East. Billions of dollars have come up missing from that arena.
This is true. This is very true. It's staggering how much waste there is.
It's almost like somebody's deliberately trying to break the bank.
Yeah.
For the power that can be derived by that, back again to the pre-Hitler.
Yeah. It's you know, everyone's got their own opinions on whether or not we should be in Iraq and Afghanistan.
I was not pro any of that personally, but. That's another story for another time.
Yeah, indeed.
So, what were some of the more surprising things that you ran into on this incredible pilgrimage you went on?
Well, you know, the most surprising thing is that when you bring it down to its fundamentals, it's really simple. you know, do a due diligence, really study what it is that you're going to, you know, pass along and allow us to see that final version before you vote. It's just really simple. The problem that I had with it was that it's not an emotional subject. You know, you talk about the Defense Authorization Act. That's an emotional subject. You know, we're talking about the Constitution. We're talking about various amendments that are being violated here. When we talk about taxes, that's an emotional subject. When we talk about abortion, gay rights, etc., those are all emotional. You know, those are people, things that people really, really feel strongly about.
And where they will actually make an effort to respond. Yes.
Oh, absolutely. And it becomes very divisive.
Mm-hmm.
You know? But when we're talking about, you know, read the bill, let us see it too. It's such a simple, fundamental thing that a lot of people don't even believe that our politicians aren't doing due diligence. That was one obstacle.
I've run into that time and again, yes.
Yeah, I mean, I've been flat out told. I said, hey, I've got a documentary. You want to take a look at it? It's about reading the bills. And they say, no, that doesn't happen. And it happens all the time.
Like they don't want to know.
Or they don't want to know.
Yeah.
That's right. And I've had people both on the liberal side and on the conservative side watch that documentary, and all of a sudden I'm their best friend. You know, because it's nonpartisan. It's just, do your job.
It is very much so.
Who's in office, do your job. Anyway, so I got a little distracted there. So that was one obstacle, is getting people to believe that our politicians are actually, in my opinion, as corrupt as they are. You know, if you're going to pass a law you've never studied,
as many,
you know anything about it, that's corrupt.
As many shades of corruption as we have been confronted by at this point, that there shouldn't be much room for doubt anymore.
Yeah, that is for sure. So people just didn't want to believe that. Second is that it was not an emotional subject. And then one of the biggest obstacles is that I'm going to North Dakota in the dead of winter, and North Dakota has winter for about 5 months out of the year, in the dead of winter to put an initiative on the ballot requiring this. And I don't know a soul in North Dakota. I mean, I know.
Well, I'm sure it is.
Could you repeat that, Gerald? What is it that you're putting up there?
Gerald, this is Audrey Layden, my co-host, sorry.
And I missed
Audrey.
That last thing. Hi. But you're going to North Dakota to do what? Your voice dropped.
Well, what my thinking on it was, and I'm just going to backpedal just a moment here.
That's fine,
Audrey. And Claudia, my thinking on it is that if we're looking at politicians and we're going, okay, so they're now in Congress, how easy is it going to be to change Congress as corrupt as it is, and with their status quos and this is how it's supposed to be done, and this is the way we do it. How do I change that? Well, that's pretty tough, especially for a guy who's not a billionaire or not even a millionaire.
David versus Goliath, yes.
Yeah. And so in looking at it further, what I discovered is that everything that Congress does has and is being done at the city and state level. Maybe not to the same magnitude, but it's still done there. And if you look at 95% of the politicians in Congress, the legislators there, you find that that they were all first politicians in their state.
I've so been preaching that for a while.
Yes, you have.
Claudio knows. Yes. It starts at home.
That's exactly right.
Right.
You know, it's like you're going to be, you know, let's say you get into the major leagues and now you are being paid $5 million a year to play baseball. Well, that's not where you learned how to swing a bat. You learned how to swing a bat a long time earlier. And so my reasoning was, okay, let's take a state and let's get a bill passed there that makes it a law that you have to do a due diligence, that you have to know what it is that you're passing into law, and that we get to see that final version well in advance of the vote. And that way, it instilled a work ethic in these guys before they got into Congress so that they can then carry that work ethic in Congress.
Mm-hmm.
Quick interruption. Just wanted to remind our public, whoever's just tuning in, this is Claudio Speakeasy and Radio Theater here on WCOM 103.5 FM. Online, I have Gerald LeBaron from Honor in Office, trying to restore honor back into politics. And, of course, I'm here with my usual co-host, Audrey Layden, and this is Claudio. Back to you, Gerald.
I forgot what I was saying, Claudio.
Oh, no. You're in North Dakota, and it's cold.
That's yes, okay.
We were talking about things being home-based.
That's right. Yes, and that's what I found to be true in every state in the nation and in every city, and I've even found it to be the case in Europe and just about every other nation, is that you develop a work ethic, and then you carry that all the way up through Congress. And we can't allow that. We've got to actually say to our politicians, this is what we want you to do while you're a mayor, a council member, a county supervisor, a legislator, or a governor. So anyway, so I go to North Dakota to attempt to pull this off. And Fools on the Hill...
the documentary, yes.
The documentary is about that adventure.
Yes.
And, you know, I don't know anybody there. So, you know,
it was pretty brave on your part. I was quite impressed.
Well, thank you. Thank you. And it was interesting, you know, like one of the things is I ended up meeting with the Secretary of State in North Dakota. When I went to the Capitol building, I was there, and the Secretary of State of North Dakota invited me into his office. And he actually spent close to an hour and a half pretty much berating me. Saying, we don't need this.
We don't need any light shone in these corners, yeah.
That's right. We don't need this. I mean, that's, you know, our guys read the bills. They do due diligence. And I know, and granted, North Dakota is still in the black, and there are some fine legislators in North Dakota, but to say that they all do it and that none of them vote party, I mean, you shouldn't be voting party line. You should not be voting that way. You should look at the issue and study it and vote your conscience.
I have a quick question, Gerald.
Sure.
You're a resident of California.
Mm-hmm.
Why didn't you start with California? Why did you pick North Dakota?
Because in order to get a measure on the ballot in California, it would cost me in excess of $1 million just to get it on the ballot. Probably, depending on the time, you know, as you get closer and closer to the election, the expense gets higher and higher and higher. But the minimum that it would cost me is $1 million, and I don't have that.
Right.
You have to get somewhere, depending on whether it's a constitutional amendment or just a regular statute. You have to get somewhere between 700,000 and 1.2 million signatures in 5 months. And that's impossible for any grassroots effort, and it's impossible for anyone who's not already rich.
And it has to be within, it has to be with start and finish within 5 months?
That's correct.
Wow.
Yeah. In North Dakota, they do have a smaller population. And so, and they actually give you a year. So you do have, so it's more possible there. But again, if you don't know a damn soul, it becomes...
Yeah, I was just wondering how effective you can be when you're not a resident, you don't live there, and you're...
You can't get the signatures yourself.
You're a carpetbagger.
yeah, it becomes very, very difficult.
Right.
And also just, and the other thing is that when you are getting signatures, you have to know how to get them. You can't just have any volunteer go out and get signatures. One of the reasons that it was so difficult there is that, I mean, I had people getting petition signatures in pencil. I had people doing little email printouts of the petition and not doing it in the right form.
Oh, boy.
Format, and all those signatures were invalid. So, I mean, I was getting an average somewhere of, you know, between 80% and 90% of all the signatures that I was getting were done wrong, and were therefore invalid.
I wonder how the internet can help with this, because I see so frequently things coming through, sign this or sign this petition, so on and so forth. Is that a workable process?
It's becoming... I know, for example, that there was somebody, there was an organization in California that was setting it up to where you could get initiative signatures but that didn't really go anywhere.
Mm-hmm. Something.
So it. But there is a difference between a petition and an initiative to put a measure on the ballot.
Uh-huh, right.
The petitions don't really hold any weight.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're just basically putting our legislators, they're just giving them notice that a lot of the people in their district support or oppose something.
I see.
But it carries no actual weight. Now, there are some petitions where if you get enough of them, and I don't know a lot about this, but in some states, if you get enough signatures through the petition process, then that entitles you to be able to actually speak in front of the legislators in a committee or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
I think that is the height of it, yeah.
That is the height of it.
Mm-hmm.
They don't carry any legal weight whatsoever.
So I'm wondering if it's possible in any way to put this kind of, not petition, but signing document on the Internet. It seems like it would be a good tool to use for somebody who wants to get something on the ballot.
Yes.
I wonder how that would be developed.
There are efforts to go in that direction.
Okay.
I'm wondering if that's a situation where you wouldn't have to basically get permission from the very government you're trying to expose before you can make any maneuvers on your own.
Well, you would absolutely have to get permission from the Secretary of State or mm-hmm. whatever that title is mm-hmm. in whatever state you're in. But
yeah.
they do have very specific laws on getting signatures.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And so basically you would have to... You would have to get approval from the Secretary of State or that voting department
right.
To do it that certain way.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And as far as I know of, there was one organization that somehow did get that permission here in California, but I haven't heard from that organization since. So,
yeah.
And you also realize that there's only 24 states in the nation where you can get signatures to either invalidate a law or pass a new law. It's actually...
Why 24 states?
Not every state has the initiative process.
I see.
Yeah, in fact, if I'm not mistaken... Now, you're in South Carolina, right?
North Carolina.
North Carolina.
North Carolina. You don't have the initiative process there, do you?
I tell you the truth, I'm not up on that.
Okay.
That particular thing, I don't know. Do you, Audrey?
I've seen enough people going around with forms to fill that I suspect we do, but I'm not.
Okay.
I don't know. I don't know.
Okay. Well, there are some states like Pennsylvania, Texas. Well, those are the first two that I know of off mm-hmm. the top of my head, where you cannot get signatures and put a measure on the ballot to change the law. You can't do it.
Mm-hmm. Hmm.
There are some, and there's two states out of those 24 states that I mentioned. There's two of them, I believe, you can only invalidate a law, but you can't get the new law passed.
Huh.
Interesting.
Yeah, that is interesting. And I think Hawaii is another one where you can't do the initiative process. And I was quite amazed by that because that right there takes away your rights to change government.
Yeah, for some reason one would assume that would be natural in all 50 states.
It's not.
Mm-hmm.
It's less than half of them.
That's a little disheartening. But that's,
yeah.
The more we dig this corpse up, the more disheartening it becomes, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. So basically, that's what this Fools on the Hill documentary is about.
So what would you say was perhaps the most positive note that you drew from this experience? I realize it was an uphill battle all the way. I think, personally, my translation is that it will hopefully serve to inspire others to do the same. I think, ultimately, that's the best thing you put forth, because I know it was an uphill struggle beyond that.
Yeah, it was... uphill might be a little generous. I
yes.
think I was hitting a brick wall.
Straight up.
People have started, buying the documentary, and I had a gentleman just last week or the week before contact me, and he's from Oklahoma, and he said, "Gerald, I watched your documentary. I've been a subscriber to On and Office for a while, and I didn't get it, and then I watched your documentary, and I really got it, and I'm going to push to get this initiative on the ballot in Oklahoma."
It does do a lot to explain it.
How can I get to see Fools on the Hill?
Just go to foolsonthehillmovie.com.
Aha, uh-huh, okay.
Just foolsonthehillmovie.com.
Okay, great.
And of course, yeah. I have my own DVD. Thank you for that.
Oh, you're welcome. You're welcome. Yeah, and so that's what's actually coming from it is, you know, people are watching the movie and then they're going, ah, I get it now.
Mm-hmm.
And this is on both the far left and far right.
Well, that's encouraging. Any comments you'd like to share from known people or influential people, so to speak, about your work?
Well, I'm not. This documentary was never geared to the politicians, and it truthfully wasn't geared to to influential people, so to speak.
No, I can fully understand that. I'm just wondering if anything is sort of spilled back. In favor in that regard, nonetheless.
Can you reword that question?
I'm just wondering if you've received any kind of positive or just whatever kind of feedback from known people in that regard.
No. I mean, Dean Cain, who's actually in the documentary.
I do remember that, yeah.
He's really a cool guy. He really is. He sent me a quick little email, and he said, I finally watched the documentary. Kudos to you, Gerald. Well done.
Yes.
You know, that was pretty much, he's never been long on the email side,
mm-hmm.
but that was an email that I got from him. It was actually really nice.
When was this documentary put up on the internet for people to watch? I mean, when was it completed?
Quite recently.
It was completed November 30th, and we've put it online at foolsonthehillmovie.com. We put it online December 10th.
Okay, so it's early in the process right now.
Yes.
Oh, it's very new.
Right.
Very new.
I certainly think it's a seed well sown, and we'll certainly go more than the 20,000 miles you put in.
Yeah, 40,000.
Oh, 40,000. Sorry.
40,000 in 6 months.
That's amazing.
I one time drove 470 miles. Not that that's a lot in a single day, but still,
it's a lot in the car.
It's a lot.
Yes.
Yeah, I drove 470 miles in that day, and I made 11 stops, you know, to drop off petition signature, you know, petitions mm-hmm. for people mm-hmm. to get signatures. 470 and 11 stops. I was like, oh my goodness.
Mm-hmm.
And
that's exhausting.
You know, you can just do the math. I drove several hundred miles every day.
That's exhausting even to think about.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Yeah.
You know, one thing that I wanted to put up and why I did the documentary, and this is kind of an answer to your question, because I got an email from a guy who got the documentary, and he said something that I just thought was so well written. He said, and this is Mark Beach from, oh shoot, I forgot which state he's from. Anyway,
that's okay.
He's not.
Tell us anyway.
Yeah, he said. Change does not usually come on the strength of one or two votes in Congress. It is public opinion and attitudes solidifying into customs and social values, and then into votes. And if you look at that, I mean, that's pretty much what it is. And if you
Absolutely.
Look at it, you look at women's rights to vote, right? Women's suffrage. It wasn't because our politicians said, you know, women really should have the right to vote. And then they passed a law saying that. No, it was protests and marching on the streets and finally our politicians went, well, they really should have the right to vote. I guess we'll go vote for it. And this is the same thing with the civil rights. And this is what they did. They basically changed the customs and social values. And that's what I'm hoping to accomplish with the documentary.
And I think that's certainly a shift you've put into place by people like you doing this, the Occupy Wall Street, and so on, and you're speaking the same language they are, for one thing. It's just there's so many more details to everything that's being put out there.
Yeah.
And hopefully, movements like this, and I have great faith that movements like this will reap that kind of fruit in the long run. The only sad thought is how long is the long run?
I know. How long do we have to wait before politicians actually start doing the proper due diligence?
I know. Well, I tell you what, we got to wrap up the show at this point. Got the next radio show host coming in, but I would like you to make any kind of a closing comment you'd like to make, and then also give us the contact information for both the documentary as well as you.
Well, I'm going to kind of whore myself out here for a second, Claudio.
Okay.
Basically, I've done all this work myself. I paid for the documentary all myself, and I could use some support, and I would sure love it if people could, you know, get the documentary, watch it, share it with their friends, and start speaking about this and get this movement going, and they can do that by going to foolsonthehillmovie.com, and if they want to know more about me, they can also go to honorinoffice.org. And they can see my views. They're pretty much nonpartisan. I don't care who's in office. I just want them doing their job.
I agree, and I'm also promoting your work, and so you can go to claudioarts.com and contact me through there, and I can give you any information you require. I'm a staunch supporter of what you're doing.
Thank you.
And I take my hat off to you for what you've done. I mean, I know how exhausting that must have been, and how spiritually, in some ways, depriving it is to face what you faced. But I can't help believe you're going to come back much stronger for it. Let's just hope that I hope that in the next short while things begin to show signs of change.
Me too. Hey, did you find it entertaining in terms of? You know, because it was laid out different than a lot of documentaries.
Yes, I actually liked the fact that it was a little more unpredictable. It was a little more, almost like a diary.
Oh, yeah.
That would be one translation. I'm sure there are many others. But no, I like the fact that it put itself on a level of the viewer.
Yeah, good.
Yeah, I really appreciated what the effort was all about to begin with, so... No, I sat there and watched it and went, I know this guy. So yes, no, that was the cool part. But no, I truly appreciate what you're doing. And Gerald, let's make this an ongoing thing.
Yes, yes, indeed. Well, thank you very much for having me on your show. Thank you, Audrey.
It's been great. It's been great.
I look forward to talking to you in the future.
Genuine pleasure, and keep up the good work. Thanks, Gerald.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
This is Claudio Speakeasy and Radio Theater, and that was Gerald LeBaron of Honor in Office, joining Audrey and myself here. And until next time, this is us saying cheers.